First reading is from Deuteronomy, and it's where Moses gives the rationale for making thank offerings, right down to prescribing exactly what one is to say. According to Moses, the key thing to remember is that Israelites were slaves in Egypt. They returned to the land of bounty, but they are never, ever, ever to forget that they were slaves in Egypt. Kind of weird, huh? Former slaves as one's identity. Not children of Abraham, but descendants of slaves. And this is almost as important. They are to remember that it was God who brought them out of Egypt, not their own efforts, God's efforts only. This thank offering, the bounty of the harvest, is to be shared not just with one's family or with fellow Israelites, but with those who don't have the wherewithal themselves, and those who are strangers, aliens, orphans, and widows. You know, being vulnerable, lacking that capacity to provide for oneself or one's family, or just barely squeaking by, is really a kind of frightening place to be. I recently read a book called Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. The author is a 30-something man of Scots-Irish descent who grew up in the Rust Belt of Ohio in the hollers of Kentucky. Unlike almost all his peers, Mr. Vance went to college. And then he graduated from Yale Law School. He's happily married, seems to have achieved the American dream. In the book, he tells the story of his life and his extended family and their neighbors. And I found the perspective fascinating. He doesn't make excuses for any of the bad decisions or dysfunctional behaviors of his family and neighbors. But it becomes clear through his account that there's a fundamentally different perspective held by folks who have for generations lived on the edge. Among other things, that perspective is rather hostile to those of the group who actually achieve much of anything. The deck is clearly stacked against success for those from this particular environment. Scarcity might as well be the middle name of those who live in these rather desperate circumstances. And a kind of fatalism, or maybe it's victimhood, pervades the culture there. By contrast, the writer F. Scott Fitzgerald once wrote, "Let me tell you about the very rich. They are different from you and me. They think, deep in their hearts, that they are better than we are because we had to discover the compensations and refuges of life for ourselves. Even when they enter deep into our world or sink below us, they still think they're better than we are. They are different." You know, I suspect Moses would recognize all of these viewpoints. The Horatio Alger kind of story of a self-made man, like Mr. Vance from his hillbilly roots. The victim of circumstances like those he left behind. Circumstances that virtually guarantee failure. The very rich of Fitzgerald's description who feel above all entitled. And the folks who are not any of the above, but who have no sense of their own privilege and sheer good luck either. But none of these perspectives answers is the question, can money and possessions and being successful satisfy our deepest need, our deepest longings? Can they make us whole? Or is the monkey on our backs named scarcity never enough? There's a very human tendency when needs are not being met to grab hold of whatever one can, hold it as tightly as one can, for fear there won't be any more, that there won't be enough. The tendency is to protect oneself from the challenge of others who also want enough. See, it's a competition, kind of like musical chairs, for us to have enough. We want to have enough. In a circumstance where his chair is always being withdrawn, somebody has to lose. But the chairs keep being removed. Enough is never enough. And most of us, if we work hard and are fortunate enough, we attribute what success we achieve to ourselves and others' lack of success to their own deficiencies. Lack of hard work or motivation, a bad attitude, maybe a bit of bad luck. Moses' directions are from a very, very different perspective on economy. It's God's economy, God's household. And the words are from the same root, economia. God's economy is different. See, God's not a bookkeeper. God has no scale like justice is depicted with, that weighs our actions. There's no ledger of good deeds and prayers, correct belief and practices. The response God gave to the execution of God's Son, Jesus of Nazareth, and unjust execution by those who feared losing something, losing power, losing authority, those who were protecting the tribe and themselves. The response God gave was life, more life, resurrected life, abundant life. The God we worship is a God of astonishing abundance for all people. There is always enough and more. Former Archbishop, Anglican Archbishop of South Africa, Desmond Tutu, once addressed the Consortium of Endowed Parishes. This is an organization in the Episcopal Church of churches that have at least a couple of million dollars in investments. And I'm sure you've seen Archbishop Tutu or pictures of him. He's a rather small man, but he's always smiling and twinkling. And Bishop Tutu stood before the consortium, before the meeting of all these big parishes, looking very short and cute and twinkly and harmless. And he told them, these folks with really big butts, "You are God's beloved children. Act like it." We too, though lacking the big bucks, are God's beloved children, gifted with abundance beyond measure. All that we are, all that we have,